Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, welcome to one more edition of Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. Thank you for giving me one good hour of your time. I know it's a Saturday and you have a lot of things to do, but how do we move forward? You know, we had a bad election. We had a, well, for some, they may think it's good, but whether you are Republican, Democratic, Libertarian or whatever, what we saw on Tuesday was not good for America, was not good for democracy, was not good for the middle class, was not good for anything going forward in this country. Yes, it was a slaughter. It was a slaughter, and worse, it brought in to power probably one of the largest groups, and I'm not only talking about the national folks that you've seen on TV, but quite a few of them are included as well. It likely brought in some of the most incompetent people to govern that this nation has ever seen. Probably brought in, and whose fault is that? A lot of us are going to blame the Kochs for their propaganda. They're going to blame all the different bad advertising, all the different negative ads. No, folks. They don't need to be blamed. They are just doing what you've allowed them to do. No blame. If we want to blame anybody for what occurred on Tuesday and what will occur going forward, please go step in front of the mirror, because that's who's responsible for what will evidently be the further demise of the working poor, the further demise of the middle class, until somehow again we're able to climb that ladder of growth again, by electing those that are really, really interested in moving the country forward. So, folks, give me a call, 281, or rather, I'm sorry, that's my number. Give me a call, 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. I don't have a blog of the week to read today, so we have more time. I'm hoping that you guys will call in and talk. I'd like to hear your points of views. Do you think the election on Tuesday was a good thing? Was it a bad thing? Whose fault it is? Move forward from here. What needs to be done? Will anything get done? What are your thoughts? 646-929-2495. to 646-929-2495. And please also remember that you can reach me on Twitter. On Twitter, I am actually monitoring the hashtag PoliticsDoneRight. I'm monitoring the hashtag PoliticsDoneRight. So if you want to, if you're shy to get online, but by the way, you shouldn't be shy to come on and talk live, 646-929-2495. I love to hear from you. Not only that, it's not one of this show is not one of those flamers, okay? This show is not a show that goes into flaming folks or trying to get folks upset or whatever. Here, all we do is we talk sensible, whether we agree or not. We're civil. This is the coffee party. Before I go further, please do remember this is Coffee Party USA. Please feel free to go to coffeepartyusa.com and let us talk. I do really want to hear from you. I'm going to start with 412. Who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hi, Egberto. It's Greg in Pittsburgh. How are you?
Hey, my dear friend Greg. How are you doing, my dear friend?
Doing well. Doing well.
I have a couple of theories
around where some of the, if you want to call it, fault might lie. I would actually start with the Democrats, the politicians who ran as Democrats, and the Democratic Party leadership. My feeling
I
is
love the
that,
way you said that. It's important what you just said, Greg. I love what you said, the politicians that ran as Democrats. Thank you, my friend. Continue.
You're welcome. Well, and my feeling there can be summed up pretty simply, and that is that they didn't actually run as Democrats. When Alison Lundgren Grimes won't even admit whether or not she voted for the President of the United States, it tells you a lot about the cowardice that exists in the Democratic Party. They fail to realize that if they're going to motivate and inspire voters to come out and vote for them, they have to be able to be distinguished from Republicans. And the Democrats have, I think, historically have failed to do this in big ways, and very often, unfortunately. But in today's day and age, to me at least, the Democrats didn't win because they didn't motivate and inspire people to vote for them. And when you look at the polling data, the data is clear. The people who voted in the midterms are the people who tend to vote in the midterms, and that's people over the age of 40 and people who are conservative. And this doesn't have anything to do with anything except data. They tend to be white. Looking at CNN's polling data, 75% of the voters who showed up on Tuesday were white. 60% of them voted for Republicans. Anybody over the age of 40 voted for Republicans more than Democrats. So the Democrats lost on Tuesday because young, white, and any other color, but young voters were not inspired to show up. The 18 to 29-year-old demographic made up just 13% of people who showed up on Tuesday. One in 10 voters were 18 to 29-year-olds. Until Democrats start to inspire more people to go to the polls by being Democrats, they'll continue to lose elections. And so
you know,
the fault
Greg,
lies
that is,
not with us, but with the Democrats.
Right. Now, Greg, you're so right. Now, the reason that I told folks to go look in the mirror is because they didn't go out to vote. So, but there's a
right.
more important piece that you mentioned, okay? And that more important piece is that why do I waste my gas? Why do I waste my time if nothing is going to change? Is that's not how I feel, but that's how many feel. Gas at $3 a gallon, maybe, just maybe, if I have to drive 10 miles back and forth to the polling location and put my kid in babysitting or whatever, I just may not do that. That's how many of them think. And after all, nothing is going to change. There was so much to run on. There was so much to run on a progressive modal. We are going to fix the student loan program. We're going to do X, Y, Z. None of that was done. But stay hot with me. Greg, I want to bring 210 in. 210, I think this is my friend John in San Antonio. How are you doing, John?
Good afternoon, Egberto. How you doing?
Great, sir. Talk to me about your feelings and what happened and what should we do going forward?
Well, I mean, what happened, I think Greg summed it up pretty well. I guess the only exception I will say is that this is really a part of a pattern. You know, this 36.7% of eligible voters turned out, which is the lowest it's been in a long time, but it really isn't that much different than, let's say, 2006 when the Democrats won big, when it was right around 40%, and or even the other elections, 2010 when it was 41. I mean, I see different people saying 41 or 42, but I mean, it's really not that big of a difference. So that's one thing I want to state. I think as far as inspiring voters, you know, as a strong progressive, I would like to think that, you know, having this populist message will really resonate. And I'm hoping that is going to be the case in the future. But if you look at people like Shanna Bellows or people, you know, like Curtis, Amanda Curtis, who are real strong progressive. If you look at Rick Wyland, another really strong progressive, they ran as progressives. They were uncompromising. They also lost big. And so
but you
I
know
think
what?
That
the difference with, if you look at Wyland, though, there's Wyland, it was pretty much stacked against Ryland, right? Because, again, his state for him, and he had that other guy, Pressler, that likely took away quite a bit from him. So I even, you know, I think absent Pressler, I think he would have stood a good chance.
Now, perhaps he'd have made it closer, but I mean, you know, South Dakota isn't a progressive state. I mean,
exactly.
It's just
right.
Facts. And so, I mean, you know, we've talked about this many times about how the demographics of the South and of the Midwest are turning against progressives, and this is something that is happening, and we need to address this. I mean, I was shocked. I mean, I wasn't shocked because I was following the polling, so I was expecting it for you know, Udall to lose. I mean, even in Iowa, and a lot of the blame. And I'm glad Bill Maher, you know, talked about this because a lot of people don't want to blame the American people. But I am going to do that because the American people, to some degree, I guess if you're polite, you can say they're confused because if you look at the ballot initiatives, they voted for progressive policies. They voted
exactly.
To increase the minimum wage in red states. They voted for legalized pot. They voted against personhood amendments. But, you know, then they're electing people who are, you know, against all of those things. So there's either, you know, there's this, you know, confusion / ignorance that is going on, and yeah, a lot of it is still the media. It's still right-wing media who is dominating, and they are getting through to independents, and the strategy of obstruction has worked. I mean, in for right now, it has. I'm not saying it's going to work in 2016.
No,
I'm not saying.
But you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. I did an interview on KPFT where that's exactly what I said. First of all, I called and I'm coming to you next 6/7/8. At 6/7/8, I actually called Mitch McConnell a genius. You know, I have Evan in the chat room right now, and Evan disputes Greg's analysis, and I imagine he disputes your analysis as well, because what he really continues to talk about is, and there is some merit to what he says when he compares a lot of Democrats to Republicans. He is correct to some extent, but he is profoundly mistaken in believing that actually there is no difference between the two, and also not engaging to actually move into a more progressive modal, which is what the country says it wants. I mean, the country may be voting in crazy ways, and we must question whether they really understand what's going on. But I've said this for years, the country is not a conservative country. And if you look at the different types of ballot measures that go on these ballots, it is proven every single time. This is a rather progressive country. It's just that they are confounded based on mind manipulation through the media and messaging. And, you know, these guys have the monies to pay quite well to get good messaging that cause people to vote against their own interests. But stay with me, John. I want to bring in 678, and I'm leaving both you and Greg hot. 678, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Dan Aronson, and the honor is all
Aronson,
mine, sir.
How you doing? Are you in this country, or are you out of the country?
I'm in this country. I've been back from Australia for weeks, so I'm all
okay.
I'm
how
all
you doing,
in.
My friend?
I'm all in, and I was actually in Montreal on Tuesday. However, thanks to the wonderful policies in Oregon, which need to be spread to the rest of the country, we vote by mail. So I had actually completed my ballot well in advance and had dropped it off. So and that, which leads into, you know, of course, my normal rant, which is, hey, look, we really participate in our democracy, don't we? Yay, us. Boy, do we suck or what? We're given one of the greatest gifts in the world every 2 and 4 years, you know, and we just spit on it. And it's like, you know, I almost get to the point, it's like, you know what, screw these people. They just don't deserve it. You know, the 40% of us that care, that showed up, you know, we should, like, start our own country and let the other 60% do with what, you know, go live in apathy USA or whatever. I don't know. I just so tired of them. But I think, you know, it's funny because you've got, I'm going to agree with my good buddy John. I like when I get to agree with John. And I'm going to agree with my good buddy Greg, right? So Joseph Stiglitz, I'm rereading his book, The Price of Inequality. You know, it's one of my faves. And in the preface, he
great
said,
guy.
He said, it's not just enough for democracy to work. It's not just enough that you get the vote. You have to have meaningful choices, he says. And then you have to have politicians who listen to the people. And we pretty much, I mean, I'm with Greg on this one. I don't think we have meaningful choices when we go to the polls. Yet, exactly as you pointed out, when it comes to the direct measures, the progressive stuff almost always wins. You know, when you know, gay marriage, whether it's legalization of marijuana, whatever it is, right? The progressive side wins. So, I'm tired of the.
What happens, Dan, is America is a, you know, when, you know, Bill Maher likes to say America is a stupid country. It's not stupid, okay? And it is confused. It's misled. I refuse to just say those folks are just stupid or whatever. I honestly think those of us that are progressives, no matter what party you're in, but those of us that are progressives, I think we have to be full-throated progressives without thinking we must always pander to the sensibilities of conservatives. I think one of our biggest problems is because as progressives we are so tolerant, and conservatives by definition are generally very intolerant. We feed into that sense of intolerance to kind of pander to them in a matter to not upset them. You know, you have that person that gets upset quickly. We pander to them. We don't want to tell them the truth. Well, I think it is high time now that we actually move in that direction. Greg?
Yes, I completely agree. I'm done compromising with the extremists on the right. They pulled this country so far to the right that there's no longer an opportunity for much compromise. And until they come towards me, I'm not interested. What I'm more interested in is activating and engaging the liberals and progressives in this country to actually start to elect people who represent us and not the big money interests and not the compromises that the Republicans want to have. I'm just not interested in that anymore. It's time to fight, not to capitulate. It's time to take a stand, no longer compromise.
We need to activate. We need to engage. We need to take the fight to the Republicans, not try to find common ground with the kind of extremist ideologies and policies that they now advocate.
It's interesting that you say that, Greg, but I'll have to agree with that simply, wholeheartedly, though it pains me that it is one. Let me give a classic example with what's going on right now. Before these guys that just got elected, the first thing that they're ready to move on. One of the things that most afflict the country at this point in time is the burden, the student loan burden that we have on kids. Another thing that burdens our middle class or working poor right now is their financial stability, the ability to have a living wage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things that they claim that they want to make the country better for everybody, including the middle class. And the first approach that they have is to encourage, they didn't call it by name, but the Trans-Pacific Partnership as well as Keystone XL.
Right.
You have to wonder, if those are the first two policies that you are looking for to seek compromise with the president. I got interviewed by Tim Danahy a couple of days ago. And what I told him is, you know, he said, what do you think? Is the president going to go ahead with Keystone or Trans-Pacific Partnership? And I'm like, well, it all depends, right? Because right now the reality is the president is seeming to would probably lean towards these things. Absent a pushback, what I've tried to tell a lot of folks is the following. Politicians, as they well should be, are nothing but empty vessels waiting to be filled by what the populace have to provide. And if the liberal base, the progressive base, don't come out and fight like hell when these guys attempt to move on TPP, when these guys attempt to move on Keystone XL, et cetera, then the president is going to move on those particular issues. I know after that what's going to happen. The liberal base is going to come out and say, oh, look, he capitulated to these guys. He is no progressive. No president is any damn real progressive. Not even the best progressive that we had with all the programs that he passed, Roosevelt, was a real progressive. Roosevelt was pulled by circumstance into being the progressive that he was. Comments, John, San Antonio.
Well, you're absolutely right about Roosevelt. I want to talk a little bit about what possibly might go on in the future. As far as the Senate and what's going to happen with the filibuster, and then talk a little bit about Obama and his vetoing strategy and how much he is going to cave. I want to start with the Mitch McConnell quote. This is from Lauren Windsor, and it was published in The Nation a few months ago. She made a secret recording of McConnell at a Koch brothers meeting. And so here's him talking about it. He says, so in the House and the Senate, we own the budget. So what does that mean? That means that we can pass the spending bill, and I assure you that in the spending bill, we'll be pushing back against this bureaucracy by doing what's called placing riders in the bill. No money can be spent to do this or do that. We're going to go after them on health care, on financial services, on the Environmental Protection Agency, across the board, all across the federal government. We're going to go after it. And so, you know, this is the agenda that they've put up for the last 4 years, except now, obviously, they'll have the Senate. So the big question is, are they going to eliminate the legislative filibuster? Now, what he's talking about is essentially another shutdown deadline. In other words, we're going to do these things, we're going to put these riders in, and if you don't agree, we're either going to shut the government down or we're going to do a debt ceiling debacle like they've had before. Now, he just said a couple of days ago he wasn't going to do that, but you got to remember Boehner said they weren't going to shut the government down either, and it's the Tea Party caucus that brought them towards that. So this is the statement that he made to the Koch brothers. You know, he's essentially an employee of the Koch brothers and the other plutocrats. And so this is kind of where I see things, you know, heading up. Is the Republican base is also, I mean, when they see that essentially that they're not going to be able to pass anything, because I think Harry Reid will filibuster until they change the rules, because, you know, if they want to try to override Obamacare, they already tried it 50 times in the House. Now let's say they try to do it in the Senate. I mean, with the rules as they stand, the Democrats can filibuster. So that's the question. Are they going to filibuster everything like the Republicans did and let it get to Obama's desk? Or are they going to change their strategy and let them have votes where 51 votes are the majority and go from there? So if that is the case, how much is Obama going to cave? Now, I've been talking to Sam Cedar about this quite a bit, and he thinks Obama is going to cave a lot. I mean, obviously, on the TPP, he's already said he's going to support that. The biggest thing for all the people who actually don't want that to happen is that a lot of other progressives in the other countries are against the TPP also, and the other trade deals that are going on, the European trade deals that want to happen. So I'm hoping that that's not going to happen, because the progressives in these other countries are going to stop it, because right now Obama wants this, the Senate and the House Republicans want it, and so that's the most likely thing that's going to happen. Well, some Democrats, most are against it, though. Most are against it because the public is definitely against it.
I don't know if we have any polls on TPP for the public. Do you know?
I don't know if they understand that. Yeah, I think there are. I mean, I can Google it, but I mean, I'm pretty sure that the polls did say they were against it. But
because like I told folks, a lot of us are going to have to get from behind our computers and actually get engaged. One of the things that you have is trying to attempt to get people to actually engage. I mean, I've been out there right here in my little conservative town with our good old Democrats here. We actually do quite a bit of engagement from a very – and it's interesting because our group is a very darn liberal group out here, and we do a lot of engagement. Problem is that when it's time for all the folks to get together, they don't. You know, we scream in emails, and we scream on shows like this, and we scream in blogs, and we scream on a page. But when it is time to get out there and just show your presence, show your body, and that's the only thing that they respond to. The Tea Party showed their body, and as much as a lot of it is AstroTurf, the Tea Party showed their body. We can't even pay to get people to show their body sometimes. I mean, so we have, if we really want change, we have to be ready and willing to put our bodies out there, like Occupy did. However, Occupy had some systemic problems that I saw from the very, 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 very beginning. But we have to be ready to put our bodies out there, you know. And the other thing that we have to be ready to do is for all the lefties, myself included, the Green Party, the Socialist Party, there are several parties, I mean, that are Move to Amend alone, probably there are about five different parties that we are a member of, the Executive Committee and Move to Amend, and we have so many different loyalties, if you will, with different parties. These parties need to get together and infiltrate. And I'll put this bluntly out there, infiltrate and become the Democratic Party, given that we are systemically a two-party state. Until that is broken, we are systemically a two-party state. And the other parties, unless they coalesce as they did in Richmond, California. Are you aware of what occurred in Richmond, California, John? Or Greg or Dan?
Yeah.
Richmond.
Right. No, I am. They voted to, the people from Chevron put up millions of dollars to have their people get elected, and their opposition won. So, you're right. That's
exactly.
A great point. Getting back to the TPP, there is a poll from Hart Research, 62% oppose the fast-track authority, with 43%
right.
strongly opposing it. So that is a majority. So
excellent.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear
but,
that.
But hold on. But that's not opposing the treaty itself. That's opposing the end run around the legislature to just do it. So fast track, just in case people are listening that don't understand or aren't familiar with it, fast track means that the Senate, or when it goes to a ratification, basically
it's
all you get
vote.
To do is a yes or no. That's it. Not
right.
So they don't get this is a monstrous 29 chapter document. So they would not have the ability to pick apart and say, well, and start negotiating. Nah, we like this. Okay, that one's fine. No, that's got to go, or we're not going to ratify it. So they don't get to do that. So it basically gives the president and the authority to negotiate, and either it passes or it doesn't. And that's more objectionable to me than the whole TPP itself. Like, let's have it, because what's
yeah,
not happening in the country
actually,
around the TPP
Dan,
is that there's no public discussion.
Man, Dan, you hit it on the money. That is even more dangerous. You're so right, my brother. You're so right. I'm keeping all three of you hot. John, Greg, Dan, I'm bringing in 916. 916, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hi, my name is Jonathan.
Hi, Jonathan. How you doing? I think you called in before. Nice to hear you.
Oh, really?
Did you call in before?
I don't believe that I have.
Okay, your voice sounded familiar. Anyway, what would you like to say, my friend?
Well, I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Has anyone really been far, even as decided to use
Okay, I think Jonathan may be sort of playing. Maybe he's one of the comedians online. Anyhow,
right,
moving
John,
on.
John, it sounded like he was 15 years older or younger, and I was going to just say, Jonathan, I'm sorry we've left you this mess. I just wanted to apologize.
And actually, Jonathan.
But can I?
Yeah, Jonathan really needs. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Alberto. I just wanted to get back to something you said, because
yes,
before
sir.
John took it in a different direction. Because my crystal ball has never worked, and so I don't really care to engage on guessing about what's going to happen in the next 2 years. I'm pretty sure it's going to be bad, but that's about all I want to do. But I want to concentrate on 2 years from now when we have a chance to maybe fix things. You made a statement about politicians being empty vessels, ready to be filled up by the will of the people. Do you believe that?
Yes, strongly. And let me tell you what I mean by that, okay? When I say by the will of the people, I don't mean by the – I'm not talking about by, the composite will of the people. I mean by the people that they get the most pushback from, including, sir, the lobbyists, okay? In other words, if there are lobbies filling that vessel and there is no consequence for the lobbies filling those vessels, then the request of – then what that vessel will be filled with is the will of the lobbyist. So what I mean by that is as follows. There are certain elections, and Richmond is a good one, right, John, where the lobbyists throw millions into people that should win based on the amount of money needed, the amount of items that would be filled into that empty vessel. And there was such an overwhelming other people ready to fill that vessel that it didn't really matter. And that when I talk about engagement and filling that vessel, that is what I'm talking about. We have to make it that whatever is pouring into that politician, there is more of us than there is of them. And that's a
type Amen,
of
brother.
You know, I'm not trying. You see what I'm saying? In other words,
I agree fully.
Right. All of us have that vote. The politician is one. Even with his millions, he's one. So what he's required to do is mislead, corrupt, change, steal. And in fact, I tell you something that I am very concerned about, very, very concerned about. If we are able to mobilize the electorate and make the electorate that much smarter, the technology is already there to continue the stealing of elections. And it's not about voter ID and all that crap. That's nothing. The stealing of the elections go on behind the doors that you cannot see. Those terminals that don't have, what is the track back that you call it when you get a paper receipt that shows who you actually voted for? So no,
paper trail.
So you are working paper trail. You are working on faith when you go to vote electronically. You're working on the faith that somehow your vote is going to matter and nobody is going to be there to corrupt it. It ain't so. It really ain't so. Right now, most of them may be okay, but if we start to win, what do you think the plutocracy is going to do? There are only a few of these guys making these tools for all the different counties around the country. It's not like there are 30, 40, 50 of them. There are very few of them. And you don't even need all of them. You just need to control enough of them. So, I mean, there's a
because voter turnout sucks. Voter turnout solves everything as far as a corrupt election. If you get 70 or 80 or 90% voter turnout, a few votes here, a few votes there ain't going to mean nothing. They can steal. They can try to steal or nullify votes. It won't matter. It just won't matter. So that to me, that's the only thing that's going to ever solve that for sure, for real. Just because you have a paper ballot doesn't mean that the people counting them aren't going to cheat. I mean, there's always a way to game every system. But
the answer is
huge voter turnout.
What I mean, though, is paper trail does have a merit. I mean, and you're correct that it depends on how the people are counting or whatever. But paper trail is not intended for people it's not intended for people to count. Paper trail is intended for whenever there is a dispute, for there to have some plausible way to resolve that dispute if we think a machine isn't working appropriately.
I get that. But in the end, the fact is, even a paper trail, what's that going to allow you to do is enough people are going to have to complain, and then everybody's going to have to bring their paper trail and put it into a box, and then they're going to count the paper trail. I mean, I just don't see that as an answer. I get what you're saying. But can I ask
you another clarifying question on something you said?
You said that Roosevelt was not a truly progressive president, and I want to disagree possibly, depending on which Roosevelt you're talking about.
I am talking about JFK. I'm saying JFK initially, and I don't recall where I'm.
With Roosevelt.
Right. You know who I mean. What's the initial?
Saying
come
FDR
on,
you mean, said. You,
FDR.
Yeah. FDR.
FDR.
Yeah. No. And you're right. FDR was not a progressive, but Teddy was the progressive. Teddy was the most progressive of all. That's what we need. We need a Teddy. We need somebody to take the case to the people,
folks,
to bust the trust.
Tell folks what party Teddy belongs to. What party did Teddy belong to?
Bull Moose Party. Had to start his own.
Right.
And he realized that the parties were as corrupt as the system itself was, and he started his own. And that's what he had to do to win the presidency, because he had lost elections as Democrats or Republicans. I can't even remember which one he started with, but he had to start his own.
He was a Republican all his life.
Thank you. Thank you. But he ended up starting the Bull Moose Party. And making a lot of enemies of the Republicans because he did stuff like bust trust, and he called out the corruption. That's what we need.
Well, you know, something that I always tell people is that progressivism progressivism was not a Democratic thing or a Republican thing. It was a people thing. People that were enlightened were progressives, and they had progressive Republicans and they had progressive Democrats. What happened in the long run is that complete split, that all the progressives sort of seemed to move to one party, or they stayed in their party and played a role. McConnell wasn't the crazy that he is today. McConnell was a pretty damn pragmatic guy. I mean, I'm not saying he was the kind of guy that I like, but he was pragmatic. Dole was a pragmatic guy. Bush 1 was a pragmatic guy. Bush 2 was a pragmatic guy. But they all changed. They all changed to fit a wacko move that is very, very hard to understand. And I really can't quite understand it, and I wish I did, but I don't know how to. John, anything else?
Yeah, I want to disagree a little bit with Dan. I mean, because I agree with him that Teddy Roosevelt had a lot of great moments, and he should be looked on as one of the great presidents in American history. But, I mean, FDR was certainly more progressive just because the times called for it. And if you look at the way he inspired the people, he really had great inspiration to the American people. And he was so beloved. And when people were at their lowest, he really helped them. And also, you know, establishing Social Security and the public works project. And I think his history, his historical record is unparalleled. I mean, to me, he's the greatest president in the history of our nation. So as great as Teddy was, FDR was even better. And if we could get anyone who even comes close to his political skills right now, the country would be changed tremendously because, you know, Obama inspired tremendous inspiration, but he, you know, I mean, and I'm not trying to bash Obama because the part of the problem that happened in the midterms was too many, you know, far left people like myself were bashing him. I don't expect perfection, but sometimes his messaging just isn't strong enough. You know, like during the healthcare debate, when he had a sit down with all the Republicans, it was like a 4-hour session. And he was telling McCain, he said, you know, the election's over, you know. And I was thinking in my head, no, you don't understand, Obama. I mean, the election is going on 24/7. I mean, you always have to be messaging. You always have to be promoting your ideas, consistency. And that's what Teddy Roosevelt did so well, is use the bully pulpit. And I wish Obama would use the bully pulpit, you know, more. And he can still do it just to preserve, you know, Democratic rule. I mean, he can do it with that veto pen, and I hope he does it. I hope he sticks up. I hope all these horrible things that the Republicans are going to throw against him, the Ryan budget and all these, you know, cutting taxes more for the rich, and all this horrible agenda that is out there that they really haven't been talking about except on, you know, right-wing radio and on Fox, I hope he's going to stand firm, because if he doesn't, you know, his historical legacy will be, you know, in tatters. A lot of Beltway people say just the opposite. He's got to make deals, but they don't understand how much these deals are going to hurt the American people. He needs to stand firm, and progressives need to support Obama and tell him to veto these deals and just stay strong to 2016 when the turnout is going to, you know, move to 60%, and hopefully it'll go even better. And going back to the TPP, there's a great Dan was right about what he was saying. That was a very important point, as you said. But there was another poll in March. That first poll was in February, and they were just talking about whether a majority of Americans believe the TPP is a good thing. And so actually, I guess most people – I actually read it wrong. So most people actually do think it's a good thing. So, I mean, there's a lot of work to do on the TPP. So,
can I say two quick things there, Gerda?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Two real quick. I promise to be real quick. So, one, yes, FDR was
obviously presided over the most progressive era probably in the country's history. However, I would say that if Teddy's legacy had continued when he left office and that and his policies had been pushed up until that time, it's a chance that the Depression never happens, in which case we don't need this FDR to come to the rescue. I would just say that. And the other thing is the Democrats, here's the biggest failure of the Democrats, and John just pointed it out, is that they didn't learn the lesson of 2000. If they had not run away from Clinton in 2000 like screaming memes and treated him like a pariah, they would have won that election, hands down. Landslide.
They did win that election.
Sorry.
Gore won the 2000.
We mean that it wouldn't be on the margin.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right, but Greg, it wouldn't have even been close. They ran away from Clinton because of that stupid blowjob he got in the Oval Office. Pardon my French. It's Blog Talk Radio. And they shouldn't have. And this midterm, they ran away from Obama. And why? The guy's a two-term freaking president. They ran away from him. They didn't learn the lesson. That's why I said they didn't learn the lesson of 2000.
The Democrats lose when they reveal the depth of their cowardice and their unwillingness to stand their ground. I yearn for the day, and I hope I live long enough to hear it, when another Democrat or an independent says, I welcome their hatred. Then I'll know there's a leader that I can vote for.
Amen, brother
Greg. Greg, that is absolutely, entirely, categorically right. I tell you why they run, though. Here's the issue. And, you know, it individually, I don't think any of these Democrats are spineless. You know, they're not spineless. What they are is dependent on the monies from all these big donors. And in their quest to some level of progressivism, they're very concerned in how progressive they become or appear so as not to alienate the plutocracy that they all get their income and their monies from. We're in a catch-22 situation here. You know, everything that we're saying is correct. We need a spine, but for everyone that puts a spine out there, we also have to understand that particular person is actually going to likely, going forward, not have the types of monies that opponent will command, both in primaries and in the national election. So while I'm not completely defending their spinelessness, I just try to define why they are in fact spineless. Capiche?
Yeah, I'd like to comment on that. It's very hard to win in the South. I mean, and so it's a very hard, you know, I mean, you can say I'm going to run as a progressive in the South. And, I mean, there are very few people that even try to do it, and they're very, out of those very few that have tried to do it, none of them have won. And so, I mean, there is something, right now, the political mindset has to change in the South and in the Midwest. And I've talked about this many times. This is a regionalized country. This is divided by region. And, you know, I don't think people really talk about that enough. I mean, it seems like the South is just getting worse.
John, here's the deal. And let me tell you the real truth of the matter, what happens here. And I think I was talking to my buddies at KPFT when I actually said this, and it goes as follows. The Republican Party gives an air of success, individualism, and all these other types of feelings to those that are willing to accept that feeling. It also provides an attack on the other party by making it the party of others. In other words, those are all the needy that goes to that party. That's the party that you have the blacks. That's the party that you have the Latinos. That's the party that you have those kinds of folks that aren't like us. You don't want to be like that. That is, you know, and it is that when you talk about a regional party, et cetera, I think we have to reach a point where we are honest to why. I mean, a lot of people know that what they're when they're voting, that they're voting against their own interests. I was talking to somebody at the polls. You know, this woman came and attacked us. And she attacked. She came head blazing, ready to come in. And then she left and said, wow, you guys are actually very nice. Because we let her explode. And then we started to talk to her. And then she finally started looking at us as human beings. What happens right now is because we have a fairly segregated country still, it is easy to dehumanize the other. And I'm not just saying this for the sake of saying this. When folks start, whenever you are able, and that's why I said it's going to be a slow process. Whenever you are able to humanize folks, it then gives folks the permission to listen. And with all the, you know, and I agree wholeheartedly with Greg and Dan, John. I just want to add a little piece to that when we're engaging folks, not giving an inch, but also not dehumanizing those that we have to engage. Because I tell you what, it is what they've done to be thus far successful. And that is what we really, really have to run against. I mean, I spoke to an 18-year-old kid holding up a Greg Abbott stance. And this guy, I think, was still in the 12th grade. And my question to him is, now exactly why did you prefer this person over that person? And he said, because I want to keep the money I earn, and I don't want to give my money to those who just waiting for me to give it to them. That is the mentality that is how these people really, really feel. Now, the other thing I mentioned at KPFT is I told them, look, the reason they can feel that way, first of all, is yes, they don't know who you are, they don't know all these issues, but as soon as you are able to make that, I mean, there's muscle memory, there's mental memory that always makes you flash back to the way you've been before, but if you can break that, if you can just break that and get folks to think a little bit, think. The Political Brain by Weston. Think Rykoff, I believe is the guy's name. Lakoff, I believe is his name. Approaching people in that manner. That is what it's going to take, because these people really are carpet bombed, not only with Fox News, they're carpet. I am on several right-wing email lists, and the things that they send me, and it didn't start 3 months ago before the election. It has already started for Hillary. It has already started for the 2016 election. They're carpet bombing to start having an effect on your mind about these candidates. These are things that the left don't do. We don't do that. We haven't started sending things out on maybe how these different politicians are and the things that they've done in life. By the time Hillary announces, the people that are the base of the Republican Party will know all the negative stuff on Hillary that has occurred, that hasn't occurred, and that they have created. And that is the kind of fight that we're having. Dan?
Oops, sorry.
Okay, I guess.
No, I was talking to you, Ben. Sorry. I agree fully. Here's one of the things that progressivism has to watch out for, and that is progressivism is based on an authoritarian. It's an authoritarian. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm not saying this right. It requires authority and to be able to force yourself onto other people. And we do have to remember, as John pointed out, right? This is the United States of America. Right. So it was known from the get go that we weren't always going to agree with each other. And yeah, regional differences, whatever it is, they divide us. And so we do have to be careful not to shove everything down people's throats and come across as we're doing that. You know, so to me, what I think we need to do is we need to make war on specific things. for instance, I think we need to start a war. I'm gonna be Greg's guy here. We need to start a war against austerity. We just need to get people to understand that this is not the answer, and then we need to tell them if some politician opens his mouth in a campaign and says I'm for austerity, boom, you're done. We need to war against specific evils of the right, not the right themselves, because why make it personal? It's like, hey, I love you, buddy, but no, austerity, that's not it. So, but you're right in that we do have to be careful that we don't come across as being too authoritarian.
Okay, Dan, we're reaching the end of the show, and as usual, I like to give all our great participants their closing statements. So starting with Greg, please give me a closing statement. We're kind of loose on time, so 30 seconds, please.
I still believe in the adage that I might be able to change someone's opinion, but I probably can't change their beliefs. And since I can't change their beliefs, I'm going to pursue an agenda and a set of objectives, whether they like it or not, even if it's better for them and they don't realize it. I don't think progressives force anything on anyone else. I would like to take issue with that point on a future show. Great show, conversation. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Greg, and we'll do it again next week. Senor Aronson, closing statement.
Be the wave.
I love the short ones, man.
watch for more information on Be the Wave, coming soon to a theater near you. Have a great week.
Is that a website that you're going to be sending us to, buddy?
Yes.
Good.
It's going to be more than just a website.
That's great. Just let me know, and you know I'm on your side. And give me a closer, John.
Yeah, it was a great show. Really enjoyed it. A lot of great comments. I just want to say, you know, don't get down, progressives. You know, put the pressure on Obama to veto these horrible bills that will probably end up on his desk. And stay true to your values. We do have to compromise on a budget to some degree. You know, we do have to govern with each other. I mean, they did win. But, I mean, stay strong with your beliefs. 2016 is going to be very different, and the future looks bright for progressives because we're winning on the issues. Just like if you look at the ACA and break it down into individual issues, people believe in it. When you start calling it Obamacare, the racism that has been in this country for, you know, hundreds of years comes out, and that's very unfortunate. But it still is still alive today, and hopefully in 10 or 20 years it'll be, you know, less of a factor, and we'll have a much better country.
Excellent. Thank you very much, John. Folks, thank you very much for being a part of the discussion. We're going to do this again next week, not knowing what the topic is yet, but I think Greg gave us a good indication of what we should add to the topic as well. Folks, as you know, we have three radio shows going. We have on Mondays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, I Take Liberty with My Coffee with Bobby Rodrigo. On Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, we have Lunch with Loudon with Janine Loudon at 3 p.m. Eastern, that is. And, of course, on Saturdays, you're here with yours truly at 1 p.m. Eastern, Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis. Now, folks, we are growing. The Coffee Party is again growing, and we want you to make sure to go to coffeepartyusa.com, become a member, join us. Let's move this country forward civilly. Again, thank you for your time. Thank you for spending a Saturday with us all. Have a wonderful day. C'est la vie. Adios. Bye-bye.